Welcome to today's conference call. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen only for conference until the question and answer session, at which time you will be prompted to press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please ensure that your line is unmuted and please record your name when prompted so that I may introduce you to ask your question. Our conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn conference over to our host, Ms. Monica Allen. Ma'am, you may proceed.
Thanks so much. Hi, this is Monica Allen from NOAA Communications, and thank you all for joining this special media call today about Climate Ready Workforce, the initiative to train workers from around our coasts and place them in good-paying jobs. I'm, again, Monica Allen, and I'll be facilitating the call. If you have additional questions after today's call, please email me at Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A, .Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at NOAA.gov. A copy of the slide deck presentation that our expert speakers who will be talking about the projects in the 9 locations will follow can be downloaded from this link. I'm going to give you the short link, which is a small bit.ly/sg-media. The link is also on the media advisory you may have received yesterday. The media advisory is on NOAA.gov under media advisories. Today's call will include brief presentations from 5 speakers, followed by a Q&A for reporters. You will hear first from Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo, and then you will hear from Janie Bavishi, the Deputy NOAA Administrator, Jonathan Pennock, the National Sea Grant College Program Director, Po Chi Fung, the Climate Ready Workforce Specialist from NOAA's National Sea Grant Office, and Frank Niepold, Climate Ready Workforce Manager for NOAA Climate Program Office. Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce U.S. Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Really important announcement this afternoon. Today I'm thrilled to announce that NOAA, which resides here in the Commerce Department, is investing $60 million through the Inflation Reduction Act for the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative. Through this initiative, we will invest in partnerships to train people and get them into jobs in the climate resilience area all around the country, from coastal areas, Great Lakes states and territories, as well as tribal lands. Because of this program, new partnerships are coming together to train workers all over the country, from supporting water resources and infrastructure in Ohio to restoring wetlands and building living shorelines in Texas to collecting real-time environmental data to aid climate adaptation efforts in Native Alaskan communities. I think this is incredibly exciting. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to advance effective, equitable workforce development, and importantly, support historically underserved communities so that everyone can thrive in the face of climate and everyone receives the economic benefits of these investments. This announcement fits into one of our top priorities here at the Commerce Department, which is making sure that we have the workers we need with the skills that are necessary to make sure that our country can compete. NOAA and the entire Biden administration, under the president's leadership, are making investments to combat climate change, boost resilience, and grow our coastal economies. And thanks to the president's Investing in America agenda, the administration has already created over 270,000 clean energy jobs across the country. Now, we have to be clear-eyed about the need to prepare workers with skills for the jobs and connections to real jobs. And that's what this initiative is designed to do. The Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is designed to accelerate our efforts by directly addressing the lack of worker training that is specifically focused on climate resilient concepts, principles, techniques, and implementation. The impacts of the climate crisis are diverse, and the skills needed to empower workers and communities are also diverse. And if we're going to ensure that American workers can take advantage of the jobs that we are creating by tackling climate change, then we have to be proactive about training folks so they have the skills they need to get the jobs that are available. In this case, in these partnerships, once people complete the training, we believe they'll be prepared for specific jobs in areas ranging from conservation to renewable energy, urban agriculture, green infrastructure, water management, emergency preparedness, and many other fields. We're also being extremely intentional about reaching communities most affected by climate change and providing the support services that are needed to enter and complete training programs such as childcare, transportation, and extra support so that folks can finish the training, graduate, and actually get high-quality, good-paying jobs. So I think this is a really exciting opportunity to ensure that Americans have the skills and opportunities they need that will boost climate resilience in their community, combat the climate crisis, and make sure that everybody has a chance to get jobs in the work that we're doing to combat the climate crisis. So I'm grateful to our team at NOAA. I want to thank them for their work. They'll be leading the charge, and I'm happy to turn it over to them to answer questions and talk more about the announcement.
Thank you so much, Secretary Raimondo. And now I'd like to introduce Janie Bavishi, who is the Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and Deputy NOAA Administrator.
Thanks so much, Monica. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. As Monica mentioned, I'm Janie Bavishi, and I serve as the Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Oceans and Atmosphere and the Deputy NOAA Administrator. I also want to thank Secretary Raimondo for joining us today to celebrate these 9 Climate Ready Workforce Awards. I spent much of my career focused on helping communities prepare for, adapt, and build resilience to weather and climate events. Before coming to NOAA, I actually served as a director of the New York City Mayor's Office of Climate Resiliency, where I had the opportunity to oversee a plan to prepare the city for climate change. And I have to say that having members of our workforce trained in adaptation and resilient solutions was absolutely critical to this effort. That's why this announcement of $60 million through NOAA's Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is so exciting. With Inflation Reduction Act funding, we're supporting 9 amazing projects that will train and place workers in good-paying jobs to combat the climate crisis in their communities and accelerate NOAA's efforts to build a climate-ready nation. Thanks to the grant funding, partnerships are coming together to train workers for jobs that will support energy and water infrastructure in American Samoa, elevate homes and retrofit buildings to mitigate flooding in Louisiana, and support the implementation of state and local adaptation plans in Massachusetts. You're going to hear more details about these projects and the other projects from our experts. But first, I just wanted to take a step back and set the stage for why a climate-ready workforce is so critical to building thriving, prosperous communities. All communities and sectors are experiencing the impacts of climate change, and they're experiencing them now. In the 1980s, we saw $1 billion disaster every 4 months. Today, we face one every 3 weeks. It's a stark reminder of the escalating risks we're up against. And the demand for adaptation and resilience solutions is increasing. And with that comes an increasing demand for a climate-ready workforce that's trained to help communities and businesses prepare for the impacts of climate change. Since 2018, city and state-level climate adaptation plans and actions have risen by 32%. But translating those into action fairly and effectively is proving to be tougher. One barrier is the lack of a diverse, skilled workforce. We're grappling with how to make sure everyone, from urban centers to rural communities, gets a fair shot at building resilience. The Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is an opportunity to advance equitable workforce development and support historically underserved communities so that we can all thrive in the face of climate change. And we know from the recent 5th National Climate Assessment that historically underserved communities of color, tribal and indigenous people, face disproportionate risks and impacts from climate change, in addition to inequity due to systemic and historical socioeconomic disparities and injustices. These same communities too often are on the sidelines of our labor market as well. And because of that, the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative focuses on recruiting people for training and jobs from underserved communities that are disproportionately affected by climate change. The Climate Ready Workforce Initiative not only focuses on training opportunities, but also builds in wraparound services such as career guidance, transportation, and childcare to reduce the barriers to participating in and completing the program. I also want to mention that the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is part of President Biden's Justice 40 initiative to support people on the front line of the climate crisis and builds on the model and success of the Good Jobs Challenge, which is spearheaded by our sister bureau in the Department of Commerce, the Economic Development Administration. The Good Jobs Challenge highlights workforce development as a key to accelerating local economic growth and rebuilding regional economies so that they are more resilient. And at the core of the Good Jobs Challenge is providing good job opportunities for American workers to achieve economic mobility and security. So what are good jobs? Good jobs are defined as involving recruitment and hiring, benefits, diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, job security, good working conditions, good pay, and opportunities to develop skills and advance careers. I want to congratulate the awardees who have skillfully designed exciting and innovative programs for training and job placement. Each of the projects brings together the strength of regional, public, and private partners, including businesses, industries, universities, and colleges. Each project has developed training and job placement to address the most pressing climate resilient needs in their communities. Now I'd like to pass this call to Jonathan Pennock, the director of NOAA's National Food Grant College Program.
Thank you, Janie, and good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jonathan Pennock. I'm director of the National Sea Grant College Program and the National Sea Grant Office at NOAA. At its core, the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is about people. As you've already heard, it is about jobs. It's also about changing people's lives for the better and making their communities more resilient to climate change. This initiative will be managed by three parts of NOAA, the National Sea Grant Office, the Climate Program Office, and the Office of Coastal Management. And those will be managed through cooperative agreements with our partners in the nine projects that are being funded. The funding from the Inflation Reduction Act provides $50 million for the nine awards and $10 million that will be used by NOAA and our three offices to provide technical assistance to the grantees to try to ensure success. Overall, we received 95 full applications that were eligible for funding, and those were externally reviewed, with the nine coming out on top. But many, many projects were very high quality. Overall, those 95 applications requested $615 million in funding, which was over 10 times what we had available, even in this generational investment that's being made. We think it shows the need and the demand in the communities nationwide for programs like this. Each of the nine project teams understand the effectiveness of regional and place-based partnerships and leveraging local and national expertise to build effective climate resilience in our coastal and Great Lakes communities. The variety of programs we're supporting is directly reflective of the variety of the communities that will benefit, from our largest urban centers to some of our most remote communities. And the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is a first-of-its-kind program for NOAA, yet it builds upon a long history at Sea Grant of working closely with coastal communities around the nation to tackle local environmental issues with the best science, strong outreach, and education. It also builds on our priority to advance ocean, coastal, and climate literacy and workforce development. These nine Climate Ready Workforce projects will be able to tap into Sea Grant's strong national and regional networks of partners to ensure effective, inclusive, and life-changing training programs and new jobs. Now I'll turn this over to Pochi Fung from NOAA's National Sea Grant Office and Frank Neupold from NOAA's Climate Program Office to provide more details about the nine projects. Po?
Thank you, Dr. Pennock. Good afternoon. My name is Pochi Fung, and I am the Climate Ready Workforce Specialist at the National Sea Grant Office. We are excited to make this grant announcement today, as are all the awardees who are looking forward to getting started. As Dr. Pennock mentioned, through this competition, NOAA is funding workforce training projects across the nation from some of America's most remote communities to some of our most populated cities. We are working on getting the funds to awardees, and we anticipate work commencing on August 1st. We will be sharing more in-depth details about these projects as they progress, so please stay tuned. A virtual symposium is scheduled for December 3rd to the 5th for awardees to provide overviews on their projects, and it will be open for the public to attend. Now, I will give you the descriptions of four of the nine projects, beginning in the West. Starting on slide 6 in the presentation slides, we will start in the farthest west project in American Samoa. This Pacific Island U.S. territory is highly vulnerable to sea level rise and other climate hazards. To address this, Hawaii Sea Grant and American Samoa Community College have partnered with the American Samoa Power Authority to create the Empowering a Resilient Workforce for American Samoa program. This program will train individuals for climate-ready positions at the Power Authority. This will strengthen American Samoa's capacity to manage and adapt to climate-related threats as the community relies on the Power Authority for essential services like electric power and drinking water. Moving on to slide 7 and up the west coast to Alaska. Alaska urgently needs training and resources to better prepare for the impacts of climate change and build a workforce that is led by indigenous communities. The tribal government of St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea is launching the Expanding and Strengthening an Indigenous Workforce for Climate Resilience in Alaska project to address the growing demand for training opportunities needed to support environmental monitoring programs for resilience and planning for adaptive ecosystem-based management in remote and rural Alaska. This project will leverage the capabilities of the Indigenous Sentinels Network and the Bering Sea Research Center. Now moving down to our next project on slide 8, on the west coast in the state of Washington. This project is called the Tribal Stewards, Cultivating Tribal Leadership and Equity in Natural Resource Co-Stewardship and Climate Resilience. This program includes collaboration among community colleges, tribal nations, employers, and climate organizations. They will support the development of a new generation of tribal leaders who are skilled in natural resource management and climate resilience. They will create education pathways and workforce initiatives tailored to indigenous communities, prioritizing tribal leadership and place-based employment. The goal is to train graduates to engage in collaborative efforts in scientific advancements and climate resilience and benefit tribal communities threatened by climate hazards. Moving to slide 9 in California, the Long Beach City College is establishing the Los Angeles County Climate Ready Employment Council to improve the county's climate resiliency workforce. They will provide expertise to assess the regional workforce needs and develop training and job placements in occupations that help increase climate resilience, specifically in the solar and water management industries. This program aims to center training and job placement on historically underrepresented communities. I'll now pass it on to my colleague, Frank Neopold, who will cover the five remaining projects.
Thank you very much, Poe. Good afternoon. My name is Frank Neopold. I'm a Climate Ready Workforce Program Manager at the Climate Program Office. Our office is very excited to make this grant announcement today with our partners. This is the first federally funded climate resilience workforce program. I give you descriptions of the remaining five projects of the nine, from the South to Caribbean to the Northeast to the Midwest. Starting in Texas, the collaborative project will build a diverse, resilient workforce in Central Texas, designed to demonstrate that climate resilience and inclusive economic prosperity go hand in hand. Texas faces increasing climate challenges such as rising temperatures, droughts, severe storm events. The goal of this project is to support Texans from underserved communities as they pursue well-paying careers in climate resilience. The initiative will focus on recruitment, skill building, job training, certifications, mentorship, community engagement, which will result in jobs in water management, green infrastructure, conservation, urban agriculture, and renewable energy. Moving on to slide 11, in Louisiana, the Flood Mitigation Industry Association and its industry partners have created a project that will train and place workers to meet high demand for skilled workers in flood mitigation projects funded by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. This program will benefit disadvantaged and underserved communities and broader coastal populations. It will also result in more resilient infrastructure, ecosystems, and economies. Moving to slide 12, next we go to the Caribbean islands of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, which are highly vulnerable to sea level rise. More intense tropical storms, drought, extreme heat. A nonprofit-based organization with over 10 years of experience implementing nature-based solutions to increase climate resilience will closely work with partners to develop curricula and train new and current workers. The trained workers will create a workforce to build community capacity to prepare for climate change impacts and increase coastal resilience. The training and job opportunities will focus on historically underrepresented communities. Now moving on to slide 13, moving up the coast to Massachusetts, the City of Boston's Office of Workforce Development will implement the Greater Boston Coastal Resilience Jobs Alliance to train individuals to implement the city's Climate Ready Boston Coastal Climate Resilience Plan and the state's Resilient Mass Plan. The project will train and place individuals from historically underrepresented communities in good jobs to enhance Boston's climate-ready workforce. The partner employers have committed to hiring participants who will gain skills in areas ranging from nature-based solutions to emergency preparedness and response. Moving on to slide 14, the ninth and final grant will be focusing on Ohio in coastal areas of the Great Lakes. These areas need a specialized workforce to ensure water resources can support economic and societal needs and withstand the vulnerabilities caused by climate change. Coastal Ohio communities such as Toledo, Lorain, Sandusky, and Cleveland are threatened by climate-exacerbated events such as degraded water quality, excessive nutrient loading, toxic algal blooms, reduced ice cover, and fluctuating water levels. To address this need, the partnership will be implementing a program to train workers, including technicians, scientists, and engineers, to meet the specialized workforce needs of the water industry in the Great Lakes. Ohio expects significant growth in climate-related jobs across the Great Lakes, including positions for hydrologists, environmental engineers, scientists, and data analytics experts. Now I'll turn it over to Monica, who will facilitate the question and answer with you all.
Thank you so much, Janie, Jonathan, Poe, and Frank, for your remarks. We will now take questions from the media. Please let the operator know your name and your media outlet. And please be sure to identify who you'd like to ask the question to. If it's to everyone, that's fine, too. We will make sure that it gets answered. Also on the line for this portion will be Nicola Garber, who is the Deputy Director of NOAA's National Sea Grant College Program, to assist with any questions. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. At this time, if you wish to ask a question on the phone, please press star 1 and record your name and affiliation to be introduced to ask your question. Once again, that is star 1. And we have a question from Tom Henry with the Toledo Blade. Your line is open, sir.
Yeah, Frank, I was wondering if you could elaborate more on what you expect to see happening in the Toledo, Cleveland, Lake Erie shoreline area. I've heard that, you know, potentially this money could be used to train more water treatment plant operators. Our problems with algal blooms are well known, but I also wondered while listening to this, if it might be used to be more proactively used for extra workforce in agriculture to help prevent runoff leading to algal blooms. But anyways, I just wondered if you could provide more specifics about what's planned for Lake Erie.
Sure, happy to answer that. So, just to give you some more details, the Ohio State will be implementing a program to train climate-ready workforce. It includes, you know, that we talked about in the previous remarks about technicians, scientists, engineers, and I think that, you know, as time goes on, those details will be emerging in the partnership. We also give you access to the media contacts and points of contact and really get into the details with these relief siting projects. But, you know, the specialized workforce needs of the water industry is the primary focus of what we see so far. That doesn't mean it can't change, but what we see so far, you know, in the Great Lakes to tackle those challenges we were just talking about, right? So, I mean, definitely the water quality and tactile algal blooms is what's coming through right off the top. But, you know, participants will be going through knowledge and skill building, you know, work to create the, and that, you know, diverse, digitally fluent workforce capable of being climate resilient water systems for various career levels. And I think that's where you might find some of the interesting lab as we get into the details. But I think one other key piece of this work is as these grants start and the teams, these sectoral partnerships begin building, they will be looking at other employers who are interested in partnering with them in, you know, as they build out these projects. So, you know, I think the best person to really get into those details that you're looking for is the team that is being assembled. And those details are at the end of the slide presentation. So, I mean, you know, that's where we are right now. But I think, you know, watching this grow in the next couple of months is going to be incredibly exciting. Hopefully
also, a quick point of clarification. Is this something that an individual like in Toledo or Ohio could apply for directly to receive a, you know, a training a grant or something? Or is that something that's, you know, they would just apply to wherever they're seeking training and hope that it, you know, the money for an expanded program works their way down to them?
Sure. So what you're getting at is the recruitment phase of these projects, where young people who are really excited about this work would find these programs. And so that part of the partnership that is being built here is to make sure that the people of these communities have opportunities for good jobs that enhance climate resilience, which means they're going to have to do recruitment work to help those, to align those interested parties with these opportunities to get these, you know, once in a lifetime investments benefits. So, I mean, you know, this why we're talking in the media right now. One of them is to make sure that the word is getting out that these projects are happening, so that if they're excited about this, you know how to follow through and possibly, you know, enroll in the programs to get trained.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Drew Crossley with Barite News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for having us today. This is a question, I'm not sure who to address this question to. Actually, it might be Janie. I think you were talking about wraparound services. I saw on the slide deck that the wraparound services, you all gave some examples. Well, the wraparound services include relocation and temporary housing support. I ask this because our publication's in Louisiana. The project in Louisiana is located in Lake Charles, but there are a bunch of other places around Louisiana that have persistent flood concerns that might want to have people being trained that then go back and live in the communities where there are those flood concerns. So, can you talk more about the wraparound services, how they can be used to benefit the concerns of underserved communities that could get this type of job training if they have extra support in accessing it?
Hi, this is Po Chi Fong. Thank you for the question, Drew. I think each project are developing wraparound services that serve their target communities. And so that level of detail I currently don't have, but as Frank had mentioned, the last slide contains all of our appointment contacts for the true subject matter experts of each of these projects. And I invite you to reach out to them for more of those details, because that would be really, they would be able to give you the best answer.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Ashley Mazandi with the Miami Herald. Your line is open.
Hi, everyone. So my question is, I'm in Miami, and Florida isn't one of the states that has an active project that's getting funding this time around. But I saw that the Sea Grant has worked with UF in the past. And so I'm wondering, when you're saying that this training leads to good jobs, if that includes in other states, and if these good jobs are lined up, or just now they have the training and the resume to make it into this workforce easier.
Yeah, Ashley, this is John Pennock. I can try to take that. Thanks for the question. As I said, the numbers of proposals that we received versus what we had funds for was radically different. So not every community around the nation is covered in these 9 awards. One of the important things, and we do have the Florida Sea Grant program is based in Gainesville at UF, but they have extension agents all around the state. The important thing, and one of the ways that we work, is to share knowledge. So it is certainly possible that there could be people from different states who would join in with some of the existing projects. Program teams have put together proposals that were reviewed. They lay out goals, but it's also can be, in a cooperative agreement, a bit of a fluid skeleton for what they're trying to do. One of the things that we do want is, even as these projects end, is to learn what works for large cities like Miami, Boston, LA, as well as many of the smaller coastal communities, and the ways in which we'll see success in increasing the knowledge and providing the roadmap for the jobs that are needed for the future is going to be to learn from these projects as an initial step. And then we will have to go forward from there. So I wouldn't take it as, oh, there was not a project in Florida. That makes a difference perhaps in the very short term of the startup. But I think these projects are designed to become templates for what's needed nationwide. And that's where we'll see that down the road. Thanks.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Amanda Zoe with Seattle Times. Your line is open.
Hi there. I was wondering if someone could talk about the importance of involving underrepresented communities and tribal communities. And then also separately, I was wondering, in all these projects, are tribal members involved, or is it just specific projects where there's an indigenous workforce element?
Thanks for the question. This is Janie Bavishi. I can take a stab at answering this, and maybe my colleagues will have something to add as well. As we mentioned, the Climate Ready Workforce Initiative is part of the Biden-Harris Administration's Justice 40 Initiative, and this means that the initiative is emphasizing supporting communities on the front line of the climate crisis, those that face disproportionate climate risks and inequities due to systemic and historical socioeconomic disparities and injustices. And the investments will directly contribute to building resilience in these communities. Many of the projects that were selected for funding are specifically designed to reduce barriers to work and enable participation and successfully, in order to enable successful completion of the workforce training opportunities through things like wraparound services, as we've discussed, asynchronous training opportunities, and other targeted programming. As I also mentioned in my remarks, we know that historically underserved and tribal communities face the disproportionate impacts of climate change, which are often compounded by other inequities. And so we wanted to make sure that this program was specifically targeted to these communities to build capacity and workforce training opportunities to advance solutions. And why don't I pass it to either Frank or Poe to answer the question about tribal workforce.
Sure. Hey, thanks for your question. And I think that actually, in as you can see in our project overviews, there are several projects that really highlight the partnership and its service to the Indigenous community. In these projects, Indigenous communities are directly actually engaged in co-development and a really strong partner in these. And so they are involved from the get-go. And, you know, I think the goal is to make sure the work that they are doing will address indigenous community issues. In many of the other projects, there's actually a huge component in making sure we're targeting and doing outreach and involvement with underrepresented communities as well and indigenous communities. I think in Los Angeles, there are indigenous community councils who are involved in, that will be involved in the council creation and therefore have a seat at the table and make sure their voices are heard and the things that we do are catering to those issues that these communities are facing.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Gautama Mehta with CRIST. Your line is open.
Hello, this is Gautama Mehta with CRIST. I was wondering if any of the jobs are expected to be unionized jobs, or for the industrial or construction related jobs, if they are expected to have project labor agreements, and whether union apprenticeship programs might be involved in any of the job training. Thank you.
This is Frank. Yeah. I can try and take a first shot at that, and please, if others have more to add. I think the way these projects are constructed, they're using the Good Jobs Challenge spectral partnerships as a model where a lot of different organization types, which can include labor unions as part of the partnership. I don't know right off the top of my head now whether or not any of the 9 projects have these relationships in them, but I think we can get back to you to see if there any of those are happening. But also remember that the sectoral partnerships that are constructed and awarded could expand to include unions. In the EDA Good Jobs Challenge programs, they definitely had unions as part of those sectoral partnerships. So the answer is it might be. I'm just not aware of it right now. But I think, Poe, does that sound right, or do you happen to know if that's already the case?
I'm going to guess that it is a project-specific thing, and so I think to get the most correct answer, it'd be great for you to reach out to project folks, or we're happy to take it as a we'll figure it out and email you back with the answer.
This is Monica here. I just wanted to remind all the reporters that the list of projects, the slides have the list of contacts for all the projects. And the projects have a leader on that list as well as a public affairs person. And you are encouraged to, as these projects develop, keep in touch with those folks as well, because these projects will take shape over time. And so they may be your best source of information. Again, those are on the last 2 slides, the contact information. And if you have any questions, please contact me and I will try to get you the answers. Again, that's Monica Allen at NOAA.gov. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Eric Stone with the Alaska Public Media. Your line is open, sir.
Hello, this is Eric Stone with Alaska Public Media. The Alaska Project talks about centering Indigenous knowledge. The recipient, Indigenous Sentinels Network, talks about being rooted both in traditional ecological knowledge plus Western scientific methods. The question is, why does NOAA believe it's important to pay special attention to traditional ecological knowledge? Kind of what role does it play in NOAA's approach to science as a whole? And how has that changed over time?
Janie may want to add something. This is John Pennock, though. I would say, you know, in our experience with Sea Grant, and certainly the indigenous tribal communities in Alaska have been really important partners with us over the years. The we have found before this administration and some of the focus, and we have worked in this space for quite a while, and we found in the fishing communities that, in fact, we learn. NOAA learns from communities that have practiced their fishing, practiced their land conservation over the years. And it's one thing, we have phenomenal scientists that we bring to bear on questions that people need answers to. They come from the universities, they come from federal agencies, they come from all over the world. But in fact, it is blending that skill set with people who have worked generationally in a certain sector that has really become through what we call often co-production. When we work together, we're better for it. And we learn as much from the tribal and indigenous members, from the fishers, as we bring to bear from the science that many of our people know. So it's really the combination that's important. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Our next question is from Haley Smith with the Los Angeles Times. Your line is open. Ms. Smith, are you on mute?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
I just had a quick clarification question of when these programs will be available to interested applicants.
Hi, this is Po Chi Fung. Currently, we're working on getting the money out to all the awardees. And so we are hoping that all will be completed and they can commence their project by August 1st. A lot of these projects are on the time frame of 3 to 4 years. And so I think this will also be project specific as to when they will start conducting their outreach and recruitment plans. And so I urge you to contact the wonderful folks at Long Beach City College, and hopefully they'll be able to give you an estimated time frame. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. We now have a follow-up from Tom Henry with the Toledo Blade. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. This is a little bit of a stretch, I know, but I didn't know if anyone wanted to address this. Has there been any, there's a lot of job training programs out there, but has anyone ever drawn any parallels to this and FDR's New Deal? I mean, we're in 2024, we're in a different world, obviously, with a fight against climate change and race against time with trying to retrain people here. And I'm just wondering if they're just in scuttlebutt, if people have ever talked about this being a 2024 version of some of the, some of the aspects of the New Deal.
I'm happy to take a stab. This is Janie Bavishi. I'm not sure about the comparison to the New Deal, but President Biden has always said that to him, climate means jobs. And I think we have an unprecedented opportunity here, as others have said, to advance workforce training, workforce development, to meet the challenge that climate change presents with, the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law funds that are hitting the streets now. So I suppose you could find the parallels, but I think we're in a moment where we're, again, rising to the challenge that climate change presents, recognizing that will require new approaches to workforce development, workforce training, and seizing that opportunity with the funding that's available.
Thank you for your question. Our last question at this time is from Drew Costley with Verite News. Your line is open.
Thanks a lot. Thanks you all again for having this and answering questions. Appreciate the amount of time that there was for answering questions too. Whoever this is appropriate for, can you all talk about the high demand for skilled workers for flood mitigation in not just Louisiana, where that the flood mitigation project is located, but throughout that region, throughout the Gulf Coast region? We're entering a hurricane. We're in hurricane season here now. There's in parts of Louisiana, there's year-round flood concerns. Same with some other major cities along the Gulf Coast. So can someone talk about the need for flood mitigation workers in this region?
I'm happy to start an answer, and if others want to build on that, that's totally fine. I mean, it's a great question, and I think that what we're seeing was alluded to at the opening remarks, where we have a very large response of programs trying to build these partnerships to focus on all the kinds of jobs that are related to climate resilience, so flood mitigation jobs. While we have a investment in that in a part of Louisiana, I think it's going to demonstrate a model for how you build those kinds of jobs. But one of the things I think is really important in this particular program is in these partnerships, they have to build commitments, the training with employers, so that when a person is trained, they're likely to get a job, a good job. We already talked about what a good job means, but good job in doing this so that there's they have a benefit, and but also the field of doing this work is there's more capacity to actually do this work. While that may not meet all the needs of Louisiana and then all the needs of hurricane-prone communities, it does definitely open a model for how these kind of new programs can work to ensure that people, and I think that I really want to emphasize that word, ensure that people get a good job, because sometimes training programs don't lead to jobs. And this program is designed to really build that connection between the training and the employment in a much more explicit way, while also helping historically underserved and underrepresented people to get access to those good jobs to do important work that is helpful to their community in removing those vulnerabilities and increasing resilience. Hopefully that helps you.
And at this time, we have no further questions.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to our experts, our speakers today, and thank you to the reporters for asking such great questions. If there are no more questions, we'll wrap up the call. Again, I'd like to thank Janie, Ho, Frank, and John, and also say that we will have an audio file of this call. It'll be posted on NOAA.gov in the media advisory site later today. If you need additional information, please feel free to email me at monica.allen@noaa.gov. I totally encourage you to get a hold of the slides if you don't have them, because they have a lot of great information in them. If you need me to email them to you, that's fine too. The contact information for each of the nine projects for the leader and a public affairs person for each of the nine projects is really going to be something that you're going to want to have and check in as this develops. And also, we want you to be sure to put on your calendar December 3rd through 5th to come to our overview session with all the projects speaking about how they are doing and what is going on. And with that, I thank you all very much.
This does conclude today's conference call. We thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect and have a great rest of your day.